B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hello and welcome into Checkpoint XP Daily for Wednesday, September 11th, 2019. We are out here for day two of the Esports Business Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada. Say it right. Las Vegas, Nevada. We're at the MGM Convention Center, day two is just getting underway. It is awesome. Every booth is set up and looks great this time around.
That's right.
We are very excited for day two. So what you're going to have coming on the podcast today is going to be, just like yesterday, the best conversations and interviews that we get at the booth here today. So we hope you guys enjoy it. We're out here at the Esports Business Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada, and we are joined now by Bennett Newsom. He is the esports strategist for Full Sail University. Bennett, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, we're so excited to have you, and there's so much, like, when you think collegiate esports, Full Sail University is one of the names that immediately springs to mind. Can you tell us a little about what's going on at Full Sail right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, we're really excited about the world of collegiate esports, so much so that we invested about $6 million into building an arena right there on our campus. If you're unfamiliar with Full Sail, we really have a ton of different degrees that all, like, lean into the esports world as it is. Most people think of esports as just, you know, competitive gaming, and there's really so much more, from the business end to the production to live events. All of that comes together in a lot of the degrees that we offer, so it really just made a lot of sense for us, you know, when we started to build out this arena. But our team, Armada, you know, is about 85 student athletes currently.
Wow.
Competing across 12 different game titles.
I mean, that's football numbers.
That is
pretty much.
It is wild. I mean, one of the really neat things about Full Sail, we already have a huge gaming culture built into everything that we already do, from our game design degrees, even to our sports casting or sports marketing degrees. You know, there's still gamers at heart that want to play, people that are super competitive. So we found it really easy to have all of these communities that have popped up, and obviously as a school and institution, we really wanted to support those, and that's kind of how we landed with as many games as we're competing in currently.
And so you briefly alluded to, you know, just how holistic your program is at Full Sail, and what we've seen is that American schools, North American schools, right, tend to focus more so on the player side, sometimes on the casting side, and European universities are focusing a lot on the business and back end side. Mm-hmm. What was the calculus into going to creating a program that really encompassed both of those sides of esports?
Right. So we currently don't offer like a specific like esports degree program at this time. But what we do and what we've been doing for the last 40 years has always been really kind of the behind the scenes and a lot of the entertainment and media industry. So, you know, show production, recording arts, game design, computer animation, you know, all of these types of programs have really been the kind of foundation of Full Sail.
Right.
And, you know, when you come to an event like this, you see the event production. You know, you go to any sort of esports event, that's what it's there. You've got your casters, but you also have the film crew. We went over to the esports arena last night and toured through that, and you know, one of the things that they kept saying is, like, you know, this is something that, you know, it takes 20 to 40 people to run this event. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people think about that, and that's, you know, definitely our wheelhouse at Full Sail. We're, you know, educating those students to go out into these industries and really focus on that. So, you know, we've had a lot of success so far with, you know, our students graduating and going out into the industry and working in esports. Matt Potoff is a one that comes to mind right away. He is an entertainment business graduate who is now the GM of E-United.
Wow.
Who, you know, obviously just won the Call of Duty World League.
Yeah, they're having a good year.
Yeah.
They are, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it really does, it's like theater, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone goes and sees a play and they think of the people who performed, but a stage production,
is massive.
It, tens, hundreds of people in some cases.
All behind the scenes, the people, mm-hmm. you know, they're not getting necessarily the glory, you know, of being on camera, being on stage, but it would not work without them.
But the esports space has no chance to grow without them. And that's really 100%. What this event here is all about, is, right. is kind of that back end of things that makes the esports scene move. Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about the Fortress.
Oh, yeah.
So tell, for our fans who don't know what the Fortress is, give them the rundown.
So the Fortress is currently the largest collegiate esports arena in the country, which is really exciting. Eventually, I'm sure somebody's going to make one that's bigger, but for right now, you know, we get claim to fame, which is exciting. But it is a full, you know, production space dedicated to esports on our campus. We've hosted a handful of internal events for our team, Armada, as well as some open to the public events. We just got done kicking off the Red Bull Conquest, which was their opener for their cross country tour of regional events leading up to their finals for Red Bull Conquest. We did the NBA 2K League ticket event there at the Fortress pretty much immediately after we opened the doors and kick things off. So we've already had a lot of, you know, really, you know, great events in the space. And the most important thing about this is a classroom. You know, not a lot of people think about that. These are students that are going to school. They're coming to these events, you know, as students, but then also working on them behind the scenes, doing the production, doing the lighting, you know, even down to the graphics that you may see on the stream or, you know, on all the LEDs, you know, those types of things. That's all like part of the classroom experience for our students at the school. So it made a whole lot of sense, you know, for Full Sail to, you know, build a space like this just to continue to support the many initiatives that we have, obviously esports being a huge one of those. And, you know, you look at this industry and you think about, you know, back to maybe like the whole social media boom, right? Mm-hmm. You know, 10 years ago, you got laughed at if you said that you were a social media manager or something mm-hmm. like that. And now, like, businesses cannot exist without it.
Every company has one. Whether it's your title or not, you are it.
Yep.
I got to ask about the partnership with WWE mm-hmm. because that's obviously been a major thing for Full Sail and NXT and all that. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've had an amazing partnership with WWE for quite a long time. The success of NXT, for those that don't know, you know, a lot of those episodes are filmed right on our campus. It's live from one of our other arenas that we have. We have another live event arena that we do all of those in. Obviously, they just announced that they're, you know, moving in the show to a new network, and they are extending it by an hour as well. It'll be on our campus, you know, pretty much every week shooting, which is huge for not only our students, faculty and staff, and obviously, you know, Full Sail as a whole. So we're absolutely really excited about that. It's a great partnership for us to have.
Awesome. And speaking about students, you know, how has some of these, you know, sort of flagship programs, especially the esports programs, how has that affected recruitment? Because we're talking about esports at the collegiate level. They're looking at it also as a recruitment tool. How has Full Sail try to leverage their esports program for that?
You know, we're not necessarily recruiting at this time for esports specifically. I would say that probably by the end of this year, you know, we're going to be looking at that a whole lot more. Again, most students are coming to Full Sail because they have a passion and a desire to be in this industry or one like it.
Right. They're seeking you out.
Correct. Right. Correct. And it just so happens that we're now also, you know, doing esports, and they have the Fortress. And so that a lot of that is bringing in people that are interested in, mm-hmm. you know, hey, I'm really into esports. I want to compete, right. but I really, really want to do the production, or I really want to go to the Dan Patrick School of Sports Casting because I want to be a shoutcaster. And that's huge. Like, that is a really huge opportunity for anybody wanting to come into the space to have this in your backyard, you know, to actually, oh, I'm going to class today, I'm the shoutcast real quick, you know.
And our listener base is a lot of parents who have kids that are middle school, high school, starting to think about college, and a lot of those kids are probably going to say something along the lines of like, hey, this esports thing is great, I want to be a part of that. And there's going to be a lot of parents out there who maybe don't have the context and don't understand like what that means other than, oh my God, my kid wants to go play video games forever. What message do you have out there for the parents that are listening in whose kids might show an interest?
I think that mindset's starting to change a lot, you know, more so now than 5 years ago.
For sure.
You know, the esports world through, you know, avenues like Twitch have really expanded, you know, obviously like Ninja is a household name almost these days. And that's pretty incredible for our industry. And you know, Twitch in general, I guess. But I think parents are starting to understand that this is, you know, actually a thing, you know, and I hear from parents that talk about, you know, getting coaching for their kids, you know, because they want to help support their passion, get better at whatever game it is that they're playing. So I think that is really changing. You know, we definitely get emails a lot, you know, from parents saying, hey, my kid really is good at this game. I'm not just being mom, you know, I want... Can you like take a look? Would you mind talking? And that absolutely, that happens all the time. I personally love talking to parents and letting them know that this is, you know, this is a reality now. You know, but again, I think part of what makes Full Sail special is the fact that yes, that we're doing some competitive gaming, but you're also learning, you know, a skill and craft and moving into an industry that, you know, has a lot of opportunities, that it's not just esports. There's so much more that goes into, you know, all of these industries as a whole that can really open up doors, you know, for people. A lot of times people are, you know, they have one direction. They're going to go, I'm going to go this way. And all of a sudden an opportunity opens here and they find their way. And now they just work in the world of esports, you know, like,
yeah. And so, you know, one thing we're asking everybody here at the Business Summit or the Esports Business Summit is, you know, not just for Full Sail,
right,
but where do you see the esports ecosystem? Where do you see esports in a year, maybe beyond?
I'm very excited for what comes in the next year, next 5 years. I think it's so important that, and we're starting to see this, it starts to trickle down from, you know, we're collegiate, right? But we're having people, you know, superintendents and principals from high schools and different counties around Florida come through the Fortress and Full Sail to just kind of get an understanding of what this whole thing is.
Right.
And as that trickles down from high schools, and I've had conversations with, you know, leaderships at middle schools that are wanting to implement esports. They see a rise in attendance, and honestly, it helps keep kids, you know, out of trouble, especially in rougher parts of town where, you know, there are other options for them to go do, you know, coming to school and playing on an esports team and doing those types of events has such a powerful and positive impact on, you know, what happens for them along the road that as those things happen to move down, we're going to start to see this shift continue to move forward a lot more positivity, I think, in the world of esports. A lot more inclusion, you know, and really helping to continue that, because those students then they played in middle school, now they're playing in high school, then they're going to college, and now they're playing, you know, at a very high level.
They're not putting the games away,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Everybody's parents always said to go, you know, go play outside, and and now that's changing. Like you haven't played, you know, 4 hours of Fortnite yet.
Sit down and practice.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, you know, there's a big, you know, I don't want to say concern, but there's a big part of the conversation about like healthy gaming as well. You know, as a university, you know, what do you guys take into consideration in terms of both mental health and physical health for your esports athletes?
Absolutely. I think all of those things are incredibly important, and you know, as a streamer myself, like, it's so easy to get burnt out. It's so easy to fall into a hole when things aren't working. Your views are up, now they're down. Like, it just, it's very volatile. So it's hard to, you know, always think about that. But one of the most important things from the collegiate aspect is that this isn't just gaming. You have to have, you know, a 2.5 GPA, you know, to be on a team. If you fall below that because you're dedicating too much time to this and not enough to your studies, that's going to have a huge impact on you for a lot of reasons. And obviously, we have a great support team at our school, you know, from the other, you know, my colleagues in the esports department. But it is really important that we maintain all of those things and we address those things as they come. So having those support structures at the school, it has been really helpful for our students. And again, you know, this is college, so you have to, you know, you have to be a student athlete, and the academics do come first. You know, you have to pass your classes, you have to get the grades, and if not, unfortunately you're on the sidelines. You know,
that's right, student before athlete,
yeah.
All the time. Bennett Newsome, esports strategist for Full Sail University, has been our guest here today. Bennett, thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely,
man.
Absolutely. It's been great. Thank
really
you for
appreciate
having.
It. We're going to have more coming to you up next from the Esports Business Summit. Stick around.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP. We are out at the Esports Business Summit, and we are joined now by the Director of Esports at the University of California, Irvine. He's been on the show multiple times. He's a good friend of ours, Mark Deppe. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much. Great to see you guys again.
So I wanted to ask you, I mean, the Esports Business Summit, we were here last year, and the event has come really a long ways in the span of a year. It seemed like the first year, everything was very Esports 101, and hey, what can we do for you? What can Esports do for you? And this year, it's kind of like, so esports is a thing. What's the path forward? What's been your opinion so far?
Yeah, I think it's just bigger and better this year. Mm-hmm. It feels like rooms are more full of people. The collegiate panel I was on yesterday, there's multiple heavy hitters from collegiate there and a standing room only. So you could tell that people see this event as kind of an important one, and it's great to see all that energy and excitement.
And now, just as a refresher for some of our viewers and listeners, you are out at UCI, University of California, Irvine, the esports program there. What is your role out there?
So yeah, we have a program. We've been around for 3 full years now, starting our 4th year right now. And yeah, I direct our program, lead our team in strategy, vision, how do we build, grow, create resources. We do 5 things with our programs. We compete, we participate in research, we engage the community, we create entertainment, and we help people launch careers. But we're one of the first scholarship programs out there offering scholarships for League of Legends, Overwatch, and this year now Smash Ultimate.
Oh, that's exciting.
Man, that's yeah. So cool.
So we actually got to attend an event out at UCI last, I think it was October, was it? Sounds about right. What's happened at UCI since then? What's been the developments over the last few months?
Well, I would say the campus is now getting more excited about esports. At public institutions, we are slow moving groups. Our program has not yet gotten a penny from the campus. They've been vocal supporters. I think that's going to change very shortly here as they look at ways to elevate both the research side and the competitive performance side. How do we establish UCI as a leader for the future? And it's now on the chancellor's radar, the provost's radar, not just their radar, their priority list. And so that's exciting. We have our conference coming up October 10th and 11th, bringing the best researchers from around the world, practitioners, collegiate leaders, and yeah, we're just ramping up for the fall.
Yeah, and now UCI has become the type of program out there that other schools are looking to emulate. Every time we go out somewhere and we talk about collegiate esports, UCI is a part of the conversation, so on everybody's lips. What do you guys think that you've done so well to make a program that's become so robust?
I think it is that robustness. We have those five pillars, which I just listed. It's not just about competing. I think that's a component. We really do focus on the whole student. We focus on their grades. I never mentioned this. I'm going to start doing every interview now, but we have 100% graduation rate for our scholarship varsity players. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, and we should be talking about that.
You really should, because I don't know if there's any sport in the country that gets to boast that, save maybe chess.
Yeah, and we're early days. We've only had a few years of the program, right. But nobody's fallen off the radar. No one's dropped out of school. No one has exited that.
Isn't that the important thing? Because what we just were saying not long ago, that parents out there are very worried that, or as we hear, they're very worried that their kid's going to go for esports or video games, and then just kind of, they're just playing video games, they're not focusing on their studies. And this completely flies in the face of that. No, they are studying, they're still working very hard, it's just they happen to be gaming and earning a scholarship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you want to go pro, you should do that. But if you like the idea of setting yourself up for long-term success, having multiple pathways to success, whether it's be playing collegiate or earning a degree or doing both at the same time, actually, is what happens at UCI. I think people really, I think it's a great compromise for young kids who understand the importance of a degree, the risks of just dropping everything, going professional, and their parents' desires to see them graduate. So, yeah, I think collegiate's a great balance if you're trying to do those things.
Well, and you can pick up skills playing collegiately that you would maybe struggle to pick up on the, you know, on the solo queue ladder or playing by yourself or even trying to go pro quickly. Like, what are some of the benefits to playing collegiately?
So I also am a commissioner of this organization called the North America Scholastic Esports Federation, North America wide, Scholastic, mostly high school. It's going down to middle schools, but it's an esports federation that helps connect learning to esports. So there's curriculum, clubs, competitions, tournaments, all this great stuff. And we do research around that. And we are seeing, we have soon-to-be-published research that demonstrates students are growing in lots of interesting ways, a lot of similar ways that you see in traditional sports. So affinity to school, you have better attendance. One of the most interesting findings thus far is the biggest area of growth for young people is socio-emotional learning. They're learning that managing their emotions and their anger and frustration actually is important and helps their team win. So there's a lot of things that you learn, from tenacity to grit to how to communicate critically, think, make decisions really quickly with limited information. So, I think parents understand it's complex, but now we're demonstrating with research and it's pretty clear there's a lot of great benefits with esports.
And so one of the big questions or one of the big trends that we're seeing is that a lot of esports programs are indeed starting out as clubs, and then whether they're getting sponsored or getting support from the campus, they're growing from that sort of foundation. What was sort of the genesis of the UCI esports program, and specifically with TAG out there?
Yeah, we have had a phenomenal gaming community for many years. And we started exploring this idea for a program in 2015. I was finishing up business school, had been on campus doing crazy things like concerts, festivals, parades, Guinness World Records events, and ready for something new in my life. And I was doing a business program or a paper on Blizzard Entertainment at the time. And when I was doing that research, I was like, wow, this esports thing's getting kind of big. Blizzard should really think about that. That was my thesis, some crappy paper. Oh, wow.
Blizzard should really think
Blizzard
about that. I like it.
That's amazing.
You know, they must have read it.
yeah, I think we have the success of things like StarCraft and everything to go to you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is before Overwatch League, so I'm saying like,
okay, well, fair enough.
The big investment was before. They were already doing esports.
Yeah.
But I was doing that research on that paper, and I read an article on Facebook that said UCI is the number one school for gamers, largely because of TAG. Mm-hmm. Their success, they had League of Legends teams that were winning national tournaments, had been ranked very highly for multiple years. We had this great game design program. And so we were number one. But the number 10 school was Robert Morris University, and they just started offering scholarships. So for me, I saw all these data points. I was like, there are scholarships in esports. UCI is really good at this. It's growing. We're uniquely positioned to do this. We have great research around it. I want to do something new and exciting with my career. I'm a guy that could maybe at least have those conversations. And so I started exploring it. Work very closely with TAG and their leaders to make sure we were building something that resonated with the UCI community. And we obviously were successful exploring it, finding support, funding, space, and all those things. And fortunately, we got lucky 100 different times. We got to present our idea to senior leadership, and they're like, go for it. And so 3 years later, they're like, let's amplify it.
But, you know, I think it's really interesting that one of your big approaches was like, we're going to work with, you know, the Association of Gamers on your campus, because you want something that's going to resonate with that base. Because as we've seen going across campuses, there is a desire and a willingness to embrace esports if it's authentic and if it's interesting. Mm-hmm. When we went to U of M and MSU, mm-hmm. you know, there were people showing up to root on a League of Legends team having no clue what League of Legends is, but because it's their school, they want to cheer for it. So there's definitely like Amazing. A willingness there, as long as it's authentic, it seems like.
That's right. And so, Mark, we're asking this to everybody out here at the esports Business Summit. In a year, what progress do you think we'll see in the esports space?
You know, I would say one of the biggest things I'm worried about, and people call it a bubble or a correction, but I think there's a little bit overexcitement, overinvestment into some pretty wild ideas in esports. And so I would like to see kind of some of the dust settle a little bit, and to make sure that we're not wasting people's money, we're not hyping up products or companies or ideas that don't really have a strong business case for it. I think people read the data about the $1 billion of revenue and all this money flowing into esports, but I think really the cost of esports are probably higher than the revenue of esports right now. No one's getting rich, I don't think. We're certainly not. So
it's not me.
Yeah.
It definitely ain't us.
So I would like to see some of the dust settle a little bit and have
a little bit of the chaff separating from the wheat.
Yeah, and just be like, cool, we have a solid baseline now. I totally believe we are going to compete through video games and digital media for a long time to come. It will be important, but I don't know if it's as valuable as people are projecting it to be. And I think, yeah, some of these investors are tripping over themselves and maybe doing so in a way that isn't so great right now.
Interesting.
Okay.
Mark Deppe, Director of Esports at UCI, has been our guest here today. Mark, thank you so much for your time, man.
Always a pleasure, guys. Anytime.
You know, we'll have more coming to you from Las Vegas, the Esports Business Summit. We'll be right back.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP. We're out here at the Esports Business Summit, day 2 in Las Vegas, Nevada. We are covering all the best news, developments, and interviews out here at the Esports Business Summit. And joining me now is Colin Smith of 704 Games. He's the president of the company, and he's given me some of his time today. Thank you so much, Colin. Thank you for being here, man.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I got to go down and play a little bit on the rig down there. This thing is amazing. Like, this isn't just like even like, you know, you think of like, you know, your gamer chair with the pedals on the floor. This feels like a NASCAR cockpit.
That is the point. That is the point. And our good friends at PlaySeat and Fanatec have done an incredible job of setting this up. It just goes to show you how lifelike and realistic this is all becoming. We're super happy with what they've put together. We're super happy with the new game, NASCAR Heat 4, that is powering it right now. That early access came out on Tuesday. The new game launches nationwide on Friday. So 704 Games is the developer and the publisher of the NASCAR Heat franchise. So we have a 10-year license with NASCAR to continue to build that game. And yeah, you take that game, you throw it in a PS4 or an Xbox One, and you set it up on one of these rigs. Not everyone is going to be able to fit one of these in their living room.
No, I would imagine probably not.
but it's a pretty amazing experience. It's a workout too. You've got some pretty sick force feedback on the wheels.
It's very impressive. just that you guys have managed to capture, because I remember I was playing and I came up a hill going a little too fast and I went off the ground and immediately the wheel goes slack and you can suddenly move it with no problem, and then you hit again and each kind of bump down on the ground, yep, the wheel picks up or, you know, lets go. The force feedback is incredible.
It's pretty amazing. Fanatec has made an incredible wheel. We have a new license agreement with them and NASCAR to continue to make some NASCAR products, so we're super excited about that. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you, it's a workout in there. It's mentally, and actually it can be somewhat, depending on how many laps you're going to run,
right,
physically challenging.
Yeah, if you were looking to do, you know, the Indy 500 or, you know, something that was going to take, you know, 400 laps, Daytona or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. You'd be exhausted by the end of that. So, I kind of want to talk about, racing games in particular, because a lot of people, their context for racing games is, you know, going and playing Mario Kart in at home or something in the arcade where you're just basically mashing the gas pedal all the way down from start to finish in the race. And that isn't what racing is. That's not real racing.
Yeah, there's a pretty massive racing community out there as it relates to the gaming space, and these guys are pretty serious, and they're pretty good, and a lot of them are former racers.
Yes,
they grew up racing dirt or go karts or midgets, and they ran out of time. They got married. They ran out of money.
Mm-hmm.
This is very expensive.
Not a cheap hobby.
Or they put their money towards probably things that were a little more constructive in their life. But racing is difficult. It's time consuming. It's challenging, and depending on how good or bad you are, can be very expensive. Depending on how many cars you want to tear up. So this is a very interesting phenomenon that we're seeing now with racing games, is it is acting as almost like the next grassroots type of effort for things like NASCAR and IMSA and Open Wheel. I mean, it's very difficult to go out and do this at the track, right? So
yeah.
These games now and these simulations are getting so realistic and so lifelike, and the physics engines and the modeling is now very real in terms of one-to-one ratios of what you see in the game and what actually happens on the track, that a lot of people are using this to either fulfill that hobby or use it as a springboard into getting into some sort of racing discipline.
You know, and we're seeing that in the F1 circuit, I feel like, is where I keep hearing about this. People who started as sim racers are brought into organizations, well-respected racing organizations, to be sim racers for them, and now are even beginning to make the jump into not just being sim racers, but to actually racing on courses. And it's because those skills are very transferable, and racing, more so than almost any other media of video game, is getting very good at mimicking the real world conditions.
Very, very true, and you're seeing that in F1 now for sure. We have an esports professional league that we just started this year,
mm-hmm,
and it's called the eNASCAR Heat Pro League, and we were shocked on how many people actually that registered to be a part of this league were former racers in one way or another, because those skills are very transferable. And a lot of people that were selected by the teams did have some sort of racing background, because those skills there's very much a one-to-one ratio of what you can do in the game and how you learn to take corners and how you learn, you know, to balance what you're doing with the wheel versus the pedals. That takes a lot of time and effort, and certainly the setups on the cars. Like, these guys will spend hours and hours fine-tuning their setups,
right,
to get an extra tenth of a second off an oval track. So it's pretty interesting what we're seeing out there right now, and we have a game now that we believe that really lends to that. It's really true to NASCAR. We have a dirt series in the game, so you can start off your career racing dirt just like a lot of kids have done in the past, and that whole discipline is very different from what you would see in something like racing trucks or ultimately in the Xfinity series or in Cup. So it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of different things going on with the game, and I think our biggest challenge now is finding that balance between making sure my 9-year-old son can hop on there and have,
right,
a great time, but also somebody who really wants to get after it online with a bunch of other competitive folks that are just as good as them. Have the ability to do that with our game as well.
And it seems to be one of the themes that we're seeing over and over again in esports is the games that are most successful are the ones that are easy to learn and difficult to master. And at the end of the day, as even as I was over there as a not particularly good racer, the concept is there. You've got it's kind of got the kind of Gran Turismo-esque vibe where it's got the, you know, the line that you're trying to follow, and you know, if you need to, if you can be accelerating, it's green, and if it's red, yep, you better be slowing down right now. It gives everyone a chance to at least understand what they're supposed to be doing, but obviously as soon as you start racing, you will see it isn't just as easy as following the line. It there's a lot of trickiness to it. So it does kind of capture that very difficult to master vibe. And I wanted to ask you about the esports league that you guys, you mentioned you just started. What has the fan reaction been like?
Well, first of all, you didn't hurt one of our cars over there, did you?
No, well, no.
Okay.
No, I mean,
all right.
I went on the dirt a lot. That's for sure.
Okay. That's okay. Okay. All right. The fan reaction has been interesting. We are putting out, so we have 12 races. The races are pretty much made for TV. They're TV ready. If you were watching this on TV,
right,
you would not know that this is essentially a product that that is built for streaming more than anything else. We have full production suite that we use. We do it with our partners at NASCAR at their studios in Charlotte, and it looks and feels great. We've got telemetry coming in. There's a lot of different cool things that we're pumping through there. So the reaction from the fan base has been fairly positive. And one of the main reasons is because it's new content. But it is, it's got all of the real world NASCAR isms integrated into it. So our pro league, is essentially, all the actual race teams, that are part of the race team, alliance, the RTA, are participating mm-hmm. in this. So these guys are racing for real world race teams. So if you're a fan of that race team and you happen to have a son or a daughter who's also interested in it, these people are very interested in their team doing well. We're also creating content midweek, and NASCAR is usually very heavy on the weekends, practice, qualifying, the race,
right,
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Now we've got content that people are talking about on a Tuesday, on a Wednesday, and that's good for the teams, and it's good for our platform as well. So I think people are very interested in what we're doing. I think there's a lot of traditional fans that are kind of like, what the hell is all of this? You know, what is esports and
right,
what are these guys doing? But then they see the actual real-world drivers participating in the broadcast, and like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool.
And that's one of the things that I kind of want to hit on as we wrap up here is, how do the real world drivers, people you might actually see in NASCAR, because you guys have a great partnership with NASCAR, what is their reaction to sim racing?
Well, a lot of them, it's funny because a lot of them do it themselves. I mean, these guys, they'll roll up to a track. If you're a rookie or if you're in your second year,
right,
of the league, you might have only raced on a track a few different times. So they will use these games to get more familiar with the track and just get that really ingrained in what they're doing, or how they're going to run that track. So they do spend a ton of time on the simulators. Now, the simulators, the actual drivers are doing that are built by Toyota and Ford, they are a little more high-tech than what we have.
Right.
They're
top of the line.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. Not exactly what you call consumer grade.
No, not at all. But what you are seeing now is you're seeing a lot of crossover between the two. Like, the game is becoming more and more realistic that we have drivers that come in. They'll come into our studio. They're coming to our office in Charlotte. We've got the rig set up, and they will race, and you will hear them counting down to a turn because they know in the real world, when they hit that one sign on the track, that's when they need their, that's when they count down in their head that they've got to hit the brakes, or that's when they're downshifting. So the game is becoming very lifelike, and the more lifelike it becomes, I think that more of a connection that we're going to have between the fan base, between the gamers, between the real world NASCAR teams and drivers, because it all is very complementary of each other.
Colin Smith, president of 704 Games, has been our guest here today. Has given us a generous amount of his time. Colin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, we'll have more coming to you from the Esports Business Summit.
Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey, welcome back to Checkpoint XP. We are live out here at the Esports Business Summit, talking to some of the most important people in the industry. And speaking of that, we now have Justin Delario joining us. He's the head of esports for Twitch. Justin, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
So, I mean, there's so much that we got to talk about. I mean, obviously, Twitch has become a major name in esports. For you personally, over the last year since the first Esports Business Summit, how has the esports scene changed?
Oh, wow. The esports industry is changing every day. Just in the last year, we've seen the continued growth of sports franchise model leagues like NBA 2K League, Riot's LCS, Overwatch League. That's been a hot topic for now two and a half years because it's a completely different change to the way people were pursuing their esports business. In the same time, we've seen the rise of Battle Royale games, and that did two things for the industry. It gave us Fortnite, which is a giant wave that, honestly, in many ways, everybody's rode a little bit. And two, it also gave us a lot of different types of content creation around esports. I think the open, inclusive nature of Battle Royale games and the quick match times and the fact that it became a popular genre of games to make content around for streamers, all of a sudden you saw this hybrid model of like, wait, is this big streamer a pro, or is this a is the pro somebody I don't know about yet and the streamer is just good at entertaining at the game, I don't know. And then, you know, we have competitions now like Twitch Rivals, which one of my teams creates, and that also blurs the line. So these have been some interesting things in the last year. And I think separately, you know, we've seen a lot more on the business side, a lot more brands and advertisers start to do things that look a little more authentic and feel a little bit better for our fans. And I think that probably touches on some of the things that stand out to me. But, you know, just by the nature of the fact this event exists and there's probably like 20, 30 panels going on with different topics just tells you there's a lot to cover.
And speaking of Twitch Rivals, you know, being sort of that hybrid event, can you talk a little bit to the conceptualization of Twitch Rivals and what it really means to Twitch as a company? Because it was something that when it first started coming around that we took a lot of interest in, and being that sort of, where does this land? It's not a league. It's not a, you know, it's not, a, you know, quote unquote, officially sanctioned type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what is, to, you know, Twitch Rivals, and how did you guys sort of come up with that competition?
Sure. Well, I think to give it the full credit, I have to, like, explain a little bit beforehand. You know, at Twitch, our esports mission is really broad. Esports and Twitch are pretty synonymous. Many would say that esports is in Twitch's DNA, and the way we've grown, esports has grown just as well alongside us. And because of that, Twitch's hands-on involvement in that part of our business has always been pretty significant. Whether we're talking about licensing, strategic partnerships, leaning in and co-producing leagues, circuits, tournaments, and series with our various publisher partners, producing our own content and events, we've done it all. Sales, marketing, etc. So a big portion of the esports department at Twitch, which I lead, is all people dedicated to the production of esports shows, events, contents, competitions, and the running of the subsequent businesses formed from those. And over the last few years, we've actually helped get esports off the ground, like Rocket League, Capcom Pro Tour, Bandai Namco, Tekken World Tour, and Dragon Ball FighterZ World Tour. We've co-produced the esports with Magic the Gathering. We've worked with ReedPop on a number of events around the country. So there's a lot of experience there just producing and building. And it was around late 2017 where, and getting back to Rivals, we just had some extra bandwidth and kind of some extra budget too. And I asked the guys, what did they want to do? And, you know, some of the different girls and guys in the room were said, let's just create some streamer tournaments. We could turn them on pretty quickly. It's not a novel idea for Twitch.
Right.
Streamers have been competing against other streamers on Twitch quite often for years, right?
Right.
But Either way, this was a way that we can ready make the format and let the streamers just show up that day, plug into it, and have good content for their fans and have fun, hopefully. And it was in 2000, after we did those events in 17, we said, you know, this is a good idea. On top of all of our other work in esports, let's just make sure we have one of these a month. They seem to feel good for the creators. And even though I work in esports and it's more of a B2B space at Twitch, we think about our core customer and who we do everything for as that creator. So in 2018, we went forward with that kind of once a month Twitch Rivals event, like I described. But it was about midway through the year where we identified a couple things. Streamers kept coming back. They were demanding more events. They were actually growing from participating because when you take a bunch of popular and or growing streamers and all of a sudden you give them this like moment in time to concentrate and all this viewership kind of encircles that, then you get this, you have this, this growth effect where streamers are all of a sudden benefiting from almost like positive cannibalization, to use for lack of better terms. And that's combined with publishers grew to like it. They support it pretty proactively. And that's unique because it's kind of like esports, but it's not. So I think that the publishers feel like it's less threatening to their traditional esports programs. Advertisers love it because it's always topical. And again, streamers keep participating.
Yeah.
And I think they're just having fun. I know from our own internal surveys that one of the number one drivers of anxiety for a streamer, especially a top tier streamer who spends 60 hours a week broadcasting, is that they don't know how they're going to be more interesting tomorrow than they were today. So all of a sudden, when you think of something like Arrivals, which is pretty consistently available, 3-4 times a week, and you apply this content format, a fun competition to partake in, the added narrative of the prize pool on the line, the publisher support and promotion, and you say, turn on your stream like you were going to today, but today we'll provide the narrative.
But now you compete.
We'll provide the spotlight.
Yeah.
And I think that's why streamers have loved it. And all these things combined have led us to do a couple things. One, just keep making these fun events, and two, say, wow, we should really like put more time and resources into this. Yeah. Maybe this is a brand we want to grow and figure out what else it could be for our publisher and streamer partners. So that's really where we are today.
Awesome.
A big portion of the hands-on esports producers at Twitch are now just focused on making Twitch Rivals a giant platform, and we want to expand it and localize in many countries next year, and there'll be more live events, and it'll be pretty cool.
And so one thing I definitely want to ask about that we've been seeing a lot more of is sort of these really interesting integrations and extra tools that a lot of esports are using on Twitch. I'm thinking about like the all access pass that you have for Overwatch League. You know, can you speak a little bit to like, are you getting these inundated with like these crazy ideas for like people to do drops and you know, extra emotes, or is this something that Twitch and the esports are kind of in a way working together to create?
Well, I wouldn't say in any way, shape, or form are inundated. In fact, you know, as the business leaders of esports, we kind of feel a bit responsible for how to improve the business of running an esport, producing content for an esport. You know, that initially started with media rights. It expanded to sponsorships. Both those parts of the market are kind of normalizing, and people are starting to understand like where value tracks so that it can grow in a reasonable pace. In the first couple of years of like heavily monetized esports, so things were a little bit shaky. But things like All Access Pass and or even merchandise would fit in this category. These things are direct-to-consumer monetization formats, and that's almost like the new frontier that esports still needs to dive very deep in and figure out better. Whether or not it's going to look like sports or whether or not it's going to look like big media entertainment, who's to say? I think esports has always done a good job of being innovative, but it's important. In fact, you know, and we know it's possible because Twitch is a great example of consumers appreciated something and they put money in.
Yeah.
And that's how you get streamer subscribers.
Yep.
I think that's it's a really important point because Twitch has created this ubiquitous platform, somewhere where anyone who, you know, can put in, can get to the baseline, you know, buy-in of, you know, basically a camera and a game that, or a PC that can stream, has the capability of getting on and performing. And if they're entertaining, it's up to the people whether or not they want to buy in. And I think one of the times we see this a lot is with esports athletes where you know, they compete in a league and maybe they're starting to age out of competition, but there's still life after competition on a platform like Twitch. And some of them are even having to make these difficult decisions. Is it better for my career to stream or to compete? And I was wondering if you might be able to speak on kind of the platform that Twitch provides for something like that.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting phenomena. I mean, I'm biased, but I'll say
of course.
Right now that the number one retirement plan for a pro esports athlete is streamer. But even before we talk about the current phenomenon and how the potential to either be a streamer or pro player and what the pros and cons are, you have to look back a few years to when even the top pros in North American LCS, like the Double Lifts and the Bjergsens at the time, they were streaming almost full time while being pro players. And what you've seen, though, in the with the rise of all of this extra infrastructure in esports, is that two things happened. More and more of their time was taken away for practice and training and looking after their physical health, which is extremely important. But then also their salaries went up. And when all of a sudden Bjergsen no longer actually made his number one income from his Twitch stream, but it all of a sudden was his salary, like maybe it should have been all along or just needed to eventually get to, it seems to me at least like some of the different pro players were a little less incentivized to continue up that full-time streaming regimen. And in fact, in the only games where I see esports pros really doing that streaming full time are ones that have a little less infrastructure and there's a little more time on the players' hands. But that doesn't mean there's not an audience for that type of content from those type of people. And what we've seen is that some streamers are successful streamers because this is strictly speaking the esports pro ranks, because they're just so good, people want to watch and learn.
Yeah.
Some people can actually just make the transition to full time personality and they do that well. Some people are a little bit in between. Like, Shroud's not the most entertaining personality to me, but he's also a really good gamer, so he's, like, sitting in the middle.
Yeah,
yeah. You can either be real good at the game, or you can be real entertaining, but you gotta be at least one of them.
Absolutely. But to your original question, is Twitch supportive of these moves? Well, I don't want to say anything that makes it sound like we're trying to pull pro players out of their careers and make them go full-time streaming. But yeah, absolutely. If there was any potentially partnered pre-existing personality or esports athlete we've worked with in the past, or even partnered streamer who's just trying to find more success, the number one place they should turn is Twitch, where we're ready to help them. That's our whole mission.
So one thing I definitely want to ask, you know, from the perspective of Twitch esports, is what is something that you guys, of course, that you can talk about, what is something that you guys at Twitch are really excited about, maybe that may be coming over the horizon?
So the thing that excites me the most right now that some of my teams think about and get to work on a daily basis sometimes makes me jealous. I don't get to solve our problems as much as I gotta travel to events like these. But if you take a step back and you think about all of esports, and this kind of lines with the point I was making earlier, where yeah, we're Twitch, and our reasonable position in this space is like primary distribution hub, but esports is so synonymous with us and in our DNA that we definitely fill a lot of other roles, you know, building this business, carrying the torch, etc. So when I take a step back and I look at the esports ecosystem, and you know, what about it has been an innovation at the point in time that it became discovered, or people thought about setting up new businesses or grew these new careers that didn't exist otherwise, and what parts are we still taking for granted, or maybe have we glossed over thinking about where innovation could be done? And I know this is a long-winded explanation, but what I'm getting at is I have a team who's looking at premium broadcast production in a traditional sense, and just bothering to ask themselves the question every day, like, why are we doing this part like everybody else does it? Is there something else we could be doing there? You know, some of that's been shown through Twitch Rivals this year, whether or not the public knew we were conducting specific experiments or not. I mean, just capturing 100 plus live streamers from different places in the world and delivering all their content from them simultaneously synced is a huge feat of broadcast technology.
Yes, it's incredible. Yeah,
the public doesn't even know, but they do know.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, if they don't know, take it from us. Yes, it is. It's incredible.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that, like, because if we didn't apply technology, we would literally have like 50 laptops open, just kind of capturing their screens, and you would never sync that. But that's one example of something I'm really excited about. Some other things I'm excited about are all of the diversity and inclusion initiatives I'm seeing in esports. I think, you know, we touched on it a little bit on our panel today, but there's a lot of work to be done around raising the diversity level in esports, whether that's for people of color, LGBT, or even women. And it's not every day that I get to, like, find myself in a position to really affect that, but I know that personally I'm going to be making an effort to. So.
Awesome. Justin Delario, the head of esports for Twitch.tv, has been our guest here today. Justin, thank you so much for your time.
No, thanks for having me.
We'll have more coming from the Esports Business Summit. Head next.
Checkpoint XP, Esports and Gaming Radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. Right now, I am alongside Daniel Egbuyo, one of my co-hosts on Checkpoint XP on campus. And right now, we're going to be talking to Victoria Horsley. She is the head of marketing for NACE. Apparently, I've been told this is the biggest of brains when it comes to collegiate esports.
We have been warned.
So, Victoria, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
So the first question I want to ask is that we know that collegiate esports is notoriously difficult to sort of bring under one banner. What have you seen on the ground level that is helping to bring that together besides just NACE? Because I know you guys are doing that too.
Yeah. One thing that we encourage schools to do on the school level is branch out. So it's called an esports program, not an esports team. So look beyond the players. It kind of started with the whole issue of Title IX. Our schools are trying to figure out how do we become more inclusive, whether it's women, minorities, what do we do? So one way to kind of alleviate, whether it's talking to your president or anything, any sort of issues that you need to propose, just branch out into broadcasting, management, IT, bring in some arts and theater for the on-air talent. Whatever you need to do, you need that full program. And what you also end up doing is you include as many people as you possibly can. And that's what's great about esports is you can play, but you don't necessarily have to be talented at the game. You can play for leisure and still be a part of esports.
So presentation is a big part of it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so piggybacking on that, we've seen that a lot of universities in Europe have taken more of a back-end approach, talking more about the business side of esports, whether it's North American teams have taken more of the sports entertainment sort of, approach to esports. You know, what are some of the things that you are seeing where programs may be, you know, blending the two of those? Is it still fragmented in that way, or are more schools looking at the back end in North America as well?
I would say it's definitely moving towards back end. It comes from the idea that there's not a lot of money in college esports, so these schools aren't looking to extremely monetize it like they would at the professional level where you see with leagues and franchising at the pro level. That's definitely more of the entertainment side. So when it comes to the colleges, as we become more established, NACE has been around since 2016, Collegiate Esports in America, about the same amount of time, a couple years older. So as that gets more mature, and I say mature, it's 5 years old.
Crazy.
But in esports, 5 years is about, 25 years?
Yeah, seriously.
So as everything gets more mature, it definitely starts to value that back end. It starts to value the people. How many can we include? How many can we help? And I think that that's the approach that colleges are taking now. And I think that that's kind of similar to how you're describing everything. It's less about strictly entertainment, and it's more about, okay, how many students can we help?
I think there's a little misconception that esports is just playing the game good, you know? I see that esports is more than just that. It's like there's so much to esports, like the marketing, the broadcasting, you know, the team management. And I think what's great about NACE is you're showing that, that's the case. There's opportunities for just about anybody in esports, and I think that's something you need to keep on doing.
Yeah, I know. For me personally, I'm definitely in it for the students. You know, esports kind of has that stigma around it that it's a bunch of kids who don't have friends, you know, they started gaming in their basement, whatever the case may be. But unfortunately, that does hold true over a course of a lot of esports. You know, it's a lot of students that may not feel like they belong in another way. And that's what I'm here for, is to say, hey, here's a team, here's some people, go hang out with them, they're just like you. Let's include these kids that don't feel like they have a place to go. And that's why I love seeing collegiate esports branch out as much as it has, especially because we govern, you know, North America, U.S. and Canada. It's just, let's reach as many kids, let's change as many lives as we can. And on top of that, about 92% of our schools give out scholarships, anywhere from $500 to full rides. So not only are you feeling involved and feeling included on your college campus while you're getting your degree, but you're also getting some help to pay for it, because it kind of starts back in high school where, you know, because there are high school leagues, maybe it's the kids that their parents can't afford an Xbox, so they're going to go play with their friends. But now, at a high school level, you can play on a team for your high school and get a scholarship to college. Like, it's kind of crazy, but for me, I that's what I thrive on. That's what I love to see.
And so, you know, we've been in contact and talking to a lot of administrators from different universities across the country here at the Esports Business Summit. And one question that we always get is, what are some of the markings or benchmarks of a successful esports program on a college campus? Can you speak to that a little bit for us?
One at the most basic level is have a team that can compete. Not necessarily win, but one that shows up and is in a tournament. So that's kind of our school's first, like, breath of fresh air, hoorah kind of event. And then after that, it's basically, you know, they want to branch out to as many teams as they can have, but they also want to say, okay, let's get our broadcasting going. Let's be able to stream our matches to anyone who wants to see them, to the rest of the student body, to the parents at home who can't travel. That's also another beautiful thing about esports, and traditional sports have kind of started going that direction, I've seen some schools stream their basketball games, stuff like that, but it's very normal in esports, saying like, oh, I go to Missouri State University, but my mom's in Washington State. Like, she wants to watch me play Overwatch. Now she can. And it's awesome. And a lot of our schools actually use that as a monetizing thing, saying like, hey, your mom has Twitch Prime. She
gets stuff for free. That's great.
So then they use that as a revenue stream.
Yeah. Oh, man.
But yeah, I think hitting that broadcasting level to where it's not just a poor quality stream, hitting that where, like, okay, people want to watch our content, but then we also include students that are producing that content, learning about the content. We have a lot of schools that have broadcasting curriculums. So it's crazy to see, but those are probably the two main benchmarks, and after that, the program just explodes.
And so I have sort of a difficult question to ask you, especially from a marketing standpoint, is that, you know, we know the climate in the country currently as it pertains to violence, and of course the violence in video games argument was trotted out not too long ago in the wake of a couple terrible tragedies. As we see esports continue to develop, does that play a factor into the type of games that schools are choosing to compete in?
To a certain aspect, yes. But overall, no. One of our biggest games is Counter-Strike Global Offensive, CSGO.
Yeah.
So whenever you have CSGO, we have Rainbow Six Siege. That one's growing. I mean, when it comes to, you know, there's the negative aspect of FPS, first-person shooters, all of that. I just challenge people to take a different look at it. You know, instead of saying, oh, this is violent because this kid played Call of Duty in their basement.
Yeah.
Let's see, why did they play Call of Duty in their basement? Maybe that was the only game that they had because they felt excluded.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, a lot of these extreme tragedies are so sad, and it's from a lot of people who felt sad. They felt like they had no other opportunity. They were mad at the world. Instead of blaming something, why don't we get to the source of, okay, why did they feel that way? I personally don't see a correlation between video games. I think it just so happens that you can go home. How easy is it for you to play football by yourself? How easy is it for you to do these other things by yourself? A video game, you can pop online. You know what I mean? It's just so much more accessible. Yeah. But I don't personally believe that the correlation is, oh, I played Call of Duty, so that's why I think this way. I think it's a much deeper rooted issue that we need to address when it comes to whatever people want to call it, whether it's mental health or anything. It's something that we need to fix in society. And I think if we look at esports as a way for those students and those people to be included and to say, I'm not going to go play alone in my basement. I'm not going to play Call of Duty by myself and be mad at the world. I'm going to go hang out with my friends. I'm making friends. I think if we look at esports in that way, no matter the game title, which League of Legends or Rainbow Six Siege, it doesn't matter what's going on screen. It's more of like, hey, they belong.
Awesome.
That's very well said. Wow.
And so one thing we are asking everybody here at the Esports Business Summit.
No exceptions.
Is that in a year, where do you see esports? And in your case, at the collegiate level, where do you see esports in 1 year?
Yeah, I think it's growing exponentially. As far as our membership, it's an exponential curve. I think it'll grow until almost every school has an esports program.
No matter the division?
Yeah, I mean, one of the main things is it's so affordable to start. Let's say with football, okay, I got to go spend $1 million on a stadium to recruit kids.
Yeah.
Esports, the average startup cost is $42,000.
Wow.
So it's whenever you're trying to propose it to administration, it's like, okay, oh yeah. And then also, you know, you don't have to play any certain game. You don't have to do any specific thing. And I know there's the fear of like, oh, okay, well, Fortnite's kind of dying off. And then there was Apex Legends and then that one died off. Like, how do you deal with the flux of games? And I say, have a MOBA team, have a Battle Royale team, teach them how to play the different games within the same suit, within the same category.
As they come out or as they die out. Yeah.
Exactly. Because that's unfortunately just kind of how esports works. But instead of looking at each game title as a different sport, that's how a lot of schools kind of look at it. Like, oh, League of Legends is basketball. That's kind of how they soak it in and then explain it to their administration that doesn't even know what gaming is. instead of doing that, maybe explain MOBA as basketball, Battle Royale as football. You know, do it more genre-based and train your coaches to teach genres. I know they have a lot of professional League of Legends teams. I mean, I personally don't see League of Legends going anywhere in the near future, but we also, for example, we run competitions in Smite, and a lot of schools say, okay, this is our League of Legends off-season. Let's take our League of Legends team, go play some Smite. You're still getting practice. It's still a MOBA game. It's the same concept. And it keeps the team working together year round, just like you have off season basketball tournaments. So I see it growing. I see as more schools kind of look at it that way rather than being scared of what happens when this game dies. It's going to explode, in my opinion. I mean, it already has.
Yeah.
But more
even
so.
More.
Yeah, exactly. I know that we're expanding. We started out in the Midwest and East Coast, and then it's just expanding the West Coast, expanding up into Canada. It's everywhere. And then I know other continents and everything are starting to get more and more involved. So, yeah.
Awesome. Well, Victoria Horsley, I make sure I get it right, Horsley,
yeah,
is the head of marketing for NACE. Thank you so much for joining us. And apparently, yes, she is the big brain for collegiate esports. You have lived up to that title.
We barely survived.
Thank you so much for joining us here on Checkpoint XP.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We've got more coming from the Esports Business Summit in Las Vegas, Nevada, MGM Grand Casino and Hotel. Coming up. Stay with us.
This is Checkpoint XP. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at CheckpointXP.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Hey guys, welcome back to Checkpoint XP. We are wrapping up day two out here at the Esports Business Summit.
And dare I say, just as amazing as day one, if not better.
Oh, that was way better than day one. I thought the panels were more on point. I mean, it was nice to have the room, you know, open and exhibiting. I thought day two was far and away the superior day.
I tend to agree with that.
It's got me excited for tomorrow. Although, you know, the final days of conventions frequently,
you know what,
are not the strongest.
They're not. It's like the final day of E3 is kind of stale. Everybody's seen everything. All the news has already been put out. And at that point, people are just like wrapping up final interviews or getting, you know what the last day of E3 is like? The last day of E3 is like those last dudes to get their like hands on.
Yeah.
It's like you only could afford to go that one day.
Right. So you went to the last day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully that's not gonna be the case. Hopefully we're going to have a good day three tomorrow. I think we will.
I hope so too, because the last day of a con is usually pretty whack.
Well, and the panels are on point tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, the FGC panel's tomorrow, so you know I'm there.
Yeah, didn't you also see there's like a best and worst brand activation?
Yes.
Because that sounds amazing.
If you're not familiar with what the heck a brand activation is, that's basically like when you go somewhere in person and you see like a really cool ad display.
Yeah.
Or like when we went to the HyperX Arena. And we saw the Iron Throne made of mechanical keyboards
and
mice.
That was cool. Yeah.
That's called good brand activation.
Yeah. So, bad brand activation is DJ Khaled. Yeah, right? That's bad brand activation.
For whose brand? All brands involved.
No one won. Nobody had a good time.
I agree. No, but yeah, that panel is going to be tomorrow at the same time as the FGC panel, so that infuriates me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'll probably have to go to the FGC panel because I got to do my journalistic duty.
You do. So we got to get out of here because we got places to be tonight. The Tempest
That's
Awards
right.
are happening tonight on our Twitch channel, by the way. Twitch.tv/checkpointxp. That's happening tonight, so make sure you're back here for that tonight if you're listening live, or if you're listening on the podcast. Maybe the podcast's out in time. Who knows? We'll find out, I suppose. But yeah, make sure you check out the Tempest Awards right here at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. And Norris, I believe there's something that they need to watch tomorrow night.
That is right.
10 o'clock.
That is correct. 10 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 Pacific, the debut of Checkpoint XP on campus. We'll be covering the collegiate esports scene. Don't worry, we'll be sprinkling in some of the top stories across all of esports, the big national stories, sort of getting a collegiate perspective on those. But this is all about the youths. This is all about the future of esports, the kids that are playing at the collegiate level. Maybe they may not be going pro, but these are your future casters, your future producers, your future managers. Hey, it may be a future owner in the mix. So these are the guys you really want to stay paying attention to on all levels. Checkpoint XP on campus Thursdays, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
And guys, that's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily. Thanks so much for joining us. That's going to do it for Checkpoint XP Daily. Thank you so much for joining us for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a wide collection of podcasts and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. at twitch.tv/checkpointxp. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan, brand management by Chad Callahan, and of course, our co-host back in Detroit, helping us out, Nate Bender and Robbie Landis. My co-host here, Norris Howard. I'm Joe Sloan. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.